them apart with his talons. Doing that while balancing on Chaz's face might prove tricky, though. Suddenly, he knew what he had to do. He'd been spending so much time in the company of mammals that the most obvious and natural solution nearly flew right over his head. He tore into the bags until the green fluid inside them started leaking out. He lapped up as much as he could, but most of it soaked into the bag's fabric. After 5 containers worth, he guessed that he'd probably drunk enough to fill one of them. That would have to do. He couldn't stomach much more of the stuff. After flapping his wings to land gently on the ground, Ravenous hopped over to Chaz. He leaned in and placed his beak inside Chaz's mouth. It smelled bad enough to make him thankful he wasn't poking his face inside Cooper's mouth. Summoning up the fatherly instincts within him, he started heaving. He heaved until he felt the sweet liquid coming back up his throat. It was a paler, more opaque shade of green coming back up. When his belly was even emptier than it had been before he'd drunk the liquid, he stood back. Chaz still wasn't stirring. Ravenous started salivating, but his conscience nagged at him to try just one last thing before savoring that delicious, sticky-sweet burst of ocular fluid. The contents of Ravenous's stomach were pooled in Chaz's still open mouth. He had to figure out some way to force him to swallow. He hopped up on Chaz's chin, leaned over, turned his head, and clamped his beak down on Chaz's nose to close his nostrils. Then he let his feet drop off Chaz's chin and pulled them up to force Chaz's mouth closed. It was not the most comfortable position he'd ever experienced, and he didn't think he could maintain it for more than a few. Chaz's face started convulsing, and Ravenous struggled to maintain his hold until he finally heard a gulp.
"Awawa,"
said Chaz, or something to that effect.
"Wahawawa."
Ravenous let go of Chaz's face and flapped to the ground.
"I cannot understand what you're saying."
"I said,"
Chaz continued, speaking properly now,
"what the fuck are you doing on my face?"
He looked down at the arrows sticking out of him and groaned. Then he licked his lips and grimaced.
"And what's this taste in my mouth?"
"There were medicinal liquids on the sled," said Ravenous. "I had to administer them the only way I knew how."
"Oh my God, did you drink them and then shit in my mouth?"
"You're not far off."
"Don't tell me that."
"I drank as much of the liquid as I could, and then regurgitated it into your mouth."
"You puked in my mouth?"
Chaz seemed rather upset about it.
"I may try your method next time. Regurgitation was a bit rough on my throat."
"Jesus Christ, and just let me die next time."
Chaz sat up and winced as he plucked the arrows out of his chest. He took in the scene around him.
"Holy shit, it was a total massacre. Is anyone else alive?"
Ravenous lifted his wings, mimicking the gesture Julian sometimes made when he didn't know the answer to a question.
"I honestly didn't think you were alive. I was just double-checking before I ate your eyes."
"You stay away from my eyes, you twisted fuck."
Chaz got to his feet, stumbled toward Cooper, then placed 2 fingers on his throat. After a moment, he nodded.
"He's got a pulse, but it's weak. How many more of those healing potions are there?"
"None in the bag I opened."
"Shit,"
said Chaz, plucking arrows out of Cooper's back.
"There may be some in the other bags."
Chaz paused in his arrow plucking to glare at Ravenous.
"Well, would you mind checking?"
"It's difficult for me to work the buckles."
"Are you good for anything but squawking in people's ears and eating their eyes?"
When he finished plucking the arrows and rolling Cooper onto his back, he walked over to meet Ravenous at the wagon, groaning down at his blood-soaked clothes. His jaw dropped when he looked in the bag.
"Jesus, Ravenous! There were 5 potions in here, and that could have brought Cooper and I back to full health if you hadn't spilled them everywhere."
"Perhaps you haven't noticed,"
said Ravenous, getting a trifle annoyed at Chaz's continuous berating and lack of gratitude.
"I don't have hands."
Chaz checked the other bags, then shook his head.
"Nothing but grains, seeds, and tiny camping equipment. I guess Cooper's fucked."
Ravenous thought for a moment. He came up with one idea that was probably too stupid to bother with, but it was still better than any of the 0 ideas Chaz was coming up with.
"The bag is still soaked with the liquid. Perhaps we could force him to eat it."
Chaz pursed his lips and looked down at the bag.
"You might be onto something."
He picked up the bag, turned it inside out, and sucked hard on a wet spot.
"I think it's working. I feel a little better."
"Save it for Cooper. He's a lot more likely to help you stay alive than the other way round.
Ravenous allowed himself to feel a twinge of satisfaction, watching Chaz come to terms with that as he stopped sucking on the bag. When they'd returned to Cooper, Chaz covered his fingers with the end of his sleeve and pulled Cooper's jaw open. What looked like a pint of bloody drool flowed out the corner of his mouth.
Now what?
Asked Chaz.
I could tear the bag into smaller pieces, offered Ravenous.
Chaz licked his lips.
I've got a better idea. We'll juice it.
I'm afraid I don't quite follow you.
Chaz crumpled the bag as small as he could, then stuffed it in Cooper's open mouth. A low groan and some snot bubbles came from Cooper's nostrils. Ravenous perched on Cooper's chest, watching curiously as Chaz cupped his hands together and dunked them in the black water. When he pulled them out, the water in his hands was murky gray. Chaz gave it a sniff and frowned.
What does it smell like? Asked Ravenous.
Rotten eggs and spoiled milk. The old man said the pool had been corrupted or something. I don't know if that's what the smell is from or if Cooper shat in it. Either way, it's better than bird vomit, and it's all we've got to work with.
He let the water trickle down on the crumpled bag in Cooper's mouth, then repeated the process three more times. He looked at Ravenous.
Here goes nothing.
He placed one hand beneath Cooper's chin and the other on top of Cooper's head, then pushed his arms together, squeezing Cooper's jaw as closed as he could. Cooper started to gurgle, then choke. His eyes opened. Chaz smiled wide.
Cooper, you're... Ooh!
Cooper's fist hit Chaz's face hard. Chaz fell into the murky black water. Ravenous hopped off Cooper's chest and flew up to a branch on a nearby tree.
Wah, wah, wah,
said Cooper, after he took the bag out of his mouth.
Bargar, snargablarg!
Blah, blah, blah,
Chaz shouted back, rubbing his face as he picked himself up out of the water.
Naga jog nagwag.
Snurg?
Cooper looked at the bag in his hand, then quickly shoved it back in his mouth, sucking as hard as he could. As he gulped down his own saliva, soiled water, and presumably some trace amounts of the medicinal liquid, arrows began to drop out of his body and his wounds closed up. He sucked and sucked until he caught Chaz staring longingly at him. He took the bag out of his mouth and held it out to Chaz.
Frognok?
Chaz grimaced and shook his head.
Wibba-jibba-tom-tom.
Ravenous couldn't fathom why anyone would choose to pass such a dreadful language down to future generations. What was the point of communication if it sounded like that? Cooper tore pieces off the bag and ate them while Chaz checked the other bodies for signs of life.
Zanzifurl and the old guy are dead,
Chaz said to Ravenous. Then he said what Ravenous assumed to be the same thing to Cooper. Cooper took the news harder than Ravenous had expected him to.
Borg for Narb,
he said again and again, obviously upset as he paced back and forth staring at the ground.
I hadn't realized he cared so much for these people he hardly knew, said Ravenous. I wonder if he'd be that upset at the news of my passing.
Chaz let out a hollow laugh.
He's not upset about them. His axe is missing.
That made things a little less awkward.
In that case, would anyone object to me eating the deceased's eyes?
Chapter 40.
The mountains keep us hidden in the east, north, and west, said Orgel.
He sipped the sweet, milky white, slightly alcoholic drink from his wooden bowl, then set it down.
But we've created a permanent illusory border, as well as a moat, along the southern edge of our village to protect us from wanderers in the fertile desert. There are dangerous creatures in the desert, and those who are not understanding of our simple way of life.
Stacy washed down a mouthful of some kind of bland meat with the same beverage which Orgel's ruddy-faced wife, Grella, had poured for them all.
Not to mention rapists. Oh, dear,
Grella frowned sympathetically.
Did you meet Lamia?
Yes, I think so. Stacy thought she remembered that being the type of creature Strovgar had referred to himself as. She found it odd that Grella had immediately jumped to that conclusion, though. Were all Lamia's rapists? She supposed that being born with innate powers of magical seduction might cause a significant number of men to lean that way, but she wasn't comfortable with racial profiling.
Did he violate you?
Asked Grella.
No,
Stacy caught Julian watching intently.
I mean, we sent him on his way with a lesson in manners.
relishing the memory of having so savagely defended herself and Julian against a creature that powerful, she shoved a spoonful of mashed potatoes and peas in her mouth. The dwarves of Tamar prided themselves on the simplicity of their culture, and that simplicity was certainly represented in their food. It was probably the least exciting food she'd eaten since arriving in this world, but it was also one of the closest experiences to normalcy, and she'd appreciated that. Grella ladled out a second serving of potato onto Julian's nearly empty dish. Julian covered his mouth for a nigh imperceptible belch.
"Oh, please, ma'am, you've already been too generous. You really shouldn't have gone to all this trouble, especially when you're not even eating."
"We've supped for the day, lad," said Orgel. He lifted his cup and smiled. "But there's always room, even for a bit more to drink."
"We really appreciate your hospitality, but honestly, I'm stuffed."
"Oh, look at you," said Grella, poking him in the ribs with a wooden spoon. "All skin and bones. There's no substance to you. How do you expect to court a fine young woman such as this without some meat on your bones? She's likely to break you in half."
Orgel laughed.
"I'm surprised Delamia didn't have a go at him as well."
Stacy and Julian glanced at each other, but remained silent. Stacy tried to find a way to steer the conversation away from them having nearly gotten raped. The eight hefty children waddling around the kitchen seemed like a good place to start.
"You have a lovely family," Grella beamed. "Why, thank you. They are a handful, but we thank the gods for the blessings they have bestowed upon us."
She grabbed the oldest one by the cheek as he waddled by, chasing his slightly younger sister.
"Rorik here fancies the new girl in the village." "Mother,"
said Rorik, trying to pull his cheek away.
"There's no shame in that," said Orgel. "You'd do your family proud. She's a fine-looking young miss, and I've no doubt she'll make a devoted wife, once she's been properly educated, of course."
That was a strange caveat, but Stacy supposed that it was good that they valued providing women with an education in their simple culture. Grella winked at Stacy.
"Three times we've caught them sneaking off in the night to go see her. Mother! It's perfectly natural to be curious. Your father visited me on many more than three nights before we were wed-bound."
"True," said Orgel, "but I was never caught."
Grella gave Rorik a stern look.
"Just you remember to keep your hands to yourself."
She pointed at the ceiling.
"The gods are watching."
Rorik sighed.
"Yes, mother."
Grella's expression turned sour as she sniffed the air.
"Gorky soiled his nappy. Run along and change it."
She let go of Rorik's cheek, and he waddled away, looking relieved to get out of there, even if it was to change a diaper full of shit. Grella shooed the other kids out of the kitchen as well, poured everyone another round of the milky white beverage as well as a bowl for herself, then took her seat at the table and gulped it back. When she placed the bowl back down on the table, Stacy couldn't help but notice that some of the drink had dribbled down her beard. On one hand, she felt like she should discreetly let her know about it so as to allow her to wipe it away. But on the other hand, it seemed wrong to ever point out a lady's facial hair.
"By the gods, woman," said Orgel, "you look as though you've been sneaking off to have shameful relations with the Lamias." "Father!"
Stacy cringed. Hearing a woman refer to her husband as father was way worse than seeing the drink in her beard, or even Orgel's insinuation as to what it resembled.
"You've got sweet milk in your beard."
Orgel wiped his own beard to demonstrate where she should wipe. He winked at Stacy.
"I can't be helped, if that's what it looks like."
Stacy wished they'd both stop winking at her. It was getting weird now. Grella wiped her beard.
"You needn't say aloud every thought that enters your filthy mind. We can't have our guests thinking we're ungodly savages. Any more talk like that, and we'll be drinking without you."
"It's really okay," said Julian. "I can assure you, some of our friends have much filthier minds than your husband."
He finished his cup of sweet milk, and Grella rose from her chair to refill it.
"Be that as it may, it's rude to speak that way in front of strange folk. One can't just assume that everyone they meet is comfortable with that kind of talk." "Or as much talk," Orgel snapped back, "regardless of the kind."
He opened a door in the hutch behind his chair and pulled out a dark brown glass bottle.
"It's getting late. Time to break out the good stuff."
He grinned and winked at Stacy again. Stacy wasn't any less creeped out by the wink, but some stronger booze than the sweet milk wouldn't go unappreciated. This stuff was so weak, they're even letting the younger kids drink it. Following their host's lead, Stacy and Julian drank what sweet milk was left in their bowls, into which Orgel then poured about 2 shots worth of the brown liquid. Grella raised her cup.
Thank the gods for blessing us with the gift of these travelers.
Oh, that's too much, said Stacy. She and Julian raised their own cups and touched them against Grella and Orgel's.
Thank you so much, said Julian. It's been an honor to be guests in your home.
Orgel sniffed his drink and smiled.
Drink up, lad. This will put some head on your stones.
More out of curiosity than to follow her host's lead, Stacy gave her drink a sniff. She reeled back, her eyes tearing up. The stuff smelled like turpentine. Orgel laughed at her, gulped back his drink, then clenched his fist as he exhaled.
Ah, that's nice. We don't drink to excess, Grella explained, for the gods frown upon such behavior. But it's not every day we have the privilege of hosting strangers in our village. A single cup is appropriate for such an occasion.
Stacy didn't require any explanation. After the day she'd had, she was ready to suck back that whole bottle, in spite of how the liquid inside it smelled. But she didn't want to disrespect their customs. The single cup would have to do. She could get a drink on properly when she and Julian made their way to a slightly more cosmopolitan town.
Speak for yourself, woman, said Orgel. I believe I may have another cup. Not before taking our guests to their quarters, you won't.
She smiled apologetically at Stacy and Julian, presumably for her husband's boorish behavior. Stacy wondered where these quarters could possibly be. The house wasn't that big. She was pretty sure she could see most of the inside from where she was sitting. No matter, that question would be answered soon enough. She held her breath as she, Julian, and Grella necked back the contents of their own cups. It barely tasted like anything. It just burned going down. She could feel the shape of her whole esophagus and where it spread out to the top of her stomach.
God damn, that's strong,
she said, slamming down her cup on the table. Then she remembered where she was and who she was talking to.
Excuse me, I just wasn't expecting. I think you're right. One cup might be enough.
Grella looked at her sternly.
Indeed. We'll need to cleanse that filthy mouth, father.
Stacy didn't know if it was an effect of how suddenly the booze was hitting her, but the situation seemed to have just turned a lot darker.
I'm sorry.
Her words were coming out slurred.
I don't usually talk like...
We can throw the mouth to the pigs, said Orgel. I want to taste that meaty thigh.
What the fuck? Stacy looked down at her legs.
Are my thighs meaty?
Come on, Stacy. Get a grip. Something fucked up is going on here. Stay in control of your...
clunk.
Stacy turned to Julian, whose head had just hit the table.
Julian!
She stood up, knocking her chair over behind her. She tried to focus on Orgel, but there were at least 6 of them weaving in and out like Stravgar's illusion spell. But this wasn't the same, because there were at least 6 of everything. It was the booze. There was something more than booze in that bottle.
What the fuck is going on?
She said, stumbling back and tripping over her chair. The Orgels frowned sympathetically at her.
It's easier if you just let it run its course, Miss Stacy.
Fuck that. And fuck you two weirdos. You think I'm afraid of you? I fought off a llama today.
Lamia,
Orgel corrected her.
Whatever.
Oh, don't bother arguing with it, father, said Grella. Just let the potion do its work. Then bring it and the other one to the kennels.
Stacy swayed on her feet. She wanted to attack one of them, but she knew she'd fall flat on her face if she dared take a step.
Who are you calling it? You hairy-faced bitch!
She felt bad about attacking her physical appearance, especially since dwarven women didn't seem bothered about having hairy faces, but continuing to talk was all that was keeping Stacy's body from succumbing to sleep. She looked in the doorway and saw 8 or 9 swaying images of their oldest child, Rorik, holding the baby and staring back at her.
What the fuck are you looking at?
It occurred to her that she might be mistaken about their intentions. Maybe it was a misunderstanding brought on by getting so suddenly shit-faced and she was currently making an ass out of herself. No, they definitely said something about feeding her mouth to pigs and eating her thighs. There wasn't more than one way to interpret that. She did her best to focus back on Rorik.
I'll fuck your mother. No, that wasn't what she wanted to say. I mean, fuck you. The rest of it came out in a huge yawn. I'll motherfuck your fuck. No, that's definitely wrong. Go mind your brothers and sisters, Grella instructed Rorik. Then she turned to Orgel. Can you believe the filth this beast is capable of? And in front of our children! Stacy was going down, and she knew it. She held up both middle fingers at Grella. Fuck you, lady! And fuck your children! As her vision faded into complete darkness, Stacy considered that that last bit might have been a bit harsh. Fuck it. At least she'd managed a coherent sentence. At least she thought she had. Yeah, I really stuck it too. She barely felt herself hit the floor.
Chapter 41. The trip back down the mountain was a lot more easygoing than the trip up it had been. Of course, it's easier going downhill than up, but the box was a lot lighter as well. Those regeneration potions the Zimbali chief shaman had cooked up ain't weighed near as much as all that dried beef and stale bread had done. Randy would have been happy to carry the box by himself if everyone else in the group didn't need to hold on to it to get through the fog. Under Captain Longfellow's guidance, they made it back to the ships, then out of the shoals of mist. No one questioned the captain on how he managed to navigate his way through, and he didn't volunteer any such information. He was a fair man, and took only as many of the Zimbali people's potions as he needed in exchange for the goods he'd brought them. Less scrupulous folks might have taken them for all they could, and committed additional atrocities upon the people. Taking that into consideration, Randy could understand the captain's reluctance to reveal his navigational secrets. Now that they had sailed successfully back out of the fog, and them who'd lost arms and legs had now grown them back, everybody was in pretty good spirits.
Maybe now's a good time to let them know where we're going next, said Catherine, who'd just sneaked up from behind.
Randy scanned Nightwind's rear deck, taking in all the happy sailors admiring their new limbs like freshly opened Christmas presents.
I reckon it's good a time as any.
Catherine took his arm with both hands just above the elbow. He was just a little creeped out. When he looked her way, she was looking back at him with big puppy dog eyes.
Would you mind?
Oh, shit. This was awkward. His high charisma score had gotten the better of her. She'd been through so much, he didn't want to throw rejection in her face right after she lost her brother, especially when it could be argued that he was partly to blame on account of it was his basilisk who'd eaten him. On the other hand, he didn't want to toy with her affections by leading her on.
You realize I'm of a different persuasion, right?
Catherine's brow furrowed, and she shoved his arm away like it was covered in roaches.
Jesus, Randy! Ugh, I mean, would you mind telling the crew that we're setting a course for Nazir?
Randy sighed and wiped the sweat off his forehead. Catherine continued to glare at him.
You don't have to look so relieved.
I'm sorry. It ain't you. It's...
He judged by her raised eyebrows it was best not to finish that sentence.
Why I gotta tell them?
Because they're more likely to listen to you than they are to me.
But you're their captain.
And you're my, press secretary.
This was news to Randy.
Well, since when?
Since now. Listen, Randy, you're a natural leader. Remember, you had those 12...
Oh, please don't bring that up, said Randy. It makes me uncomfortable. Anyway, those guys believed in me because they saw me perform fantastic miracles. Now I'm just the same as any old low-level paladin.
You're also very handsome.
Their boundaries had been set, and he knew she was just using flattery to get him to do what she wanted, but he also knew that she was objectively correct as he was in his current form and accepted the compliment as gracefully as he knew how.
Thanks for saying so.
And rumor has it that a lot of these guys are...
Stop right there, said Randy.
He shook his head at her.
So there it is. You'll think they'll listen to me because they're all a bunch of queers?
Catherine shrugged uncomfortably.
Well,
they ain't jingling one another's bells on account of them being gay. It's a lonely life at sea, and oftentimes people just take what they can get. And from what I've seen, folks is a lot less uptight in this world about sexuality in general than they is back home.
Yeah, but...
It ain't like the captain put an ad out for queers only. I reckon the ratio here is the same as anywhere.
meaning most of them would likely be more persuaded by woman.
This is still a heavily patriarchal society, said Catherine. Just because they might prefer to bone me doesn't mean they're more likely to listen to me telling them to sail to a dangerous place.
Randy knew Catherine wanted to shove this responsibility on him and had expected her to keep pushing the gay thing. Her last argument took him by surprise. She actually had a pretty good point there. If he wasn't personally invested in their mission, he probably wouldn't be too keen to follow her orders. Not because she was a woman so much, but because she clearly had less experience at sea and poorer judgment than even the late Captain Martinoli.
Fine, I'll do it.
Catherine gave him an encouraging punch in the arm.
Attaboy! Shiver those timbers, me hearty! Ahoy and avast!
Randy nodded. Catherine had been wise to delegate this responsibility to someone else. In fact, it would probably be for the best if she never addressed her crew directly. He climbed up the swivel-mounted ballista, as that's where he had the best view of the most people. It was unloaded, and he kept his hands clear of it to make sure he didn't come off as threatening at all.
"Excuse me!" he called out to the crew.
He got a couple of glances, but didn't hold them for long.
"Crew of Nightwind, may I please have your attention?"
That didn't get him anywhere. He sighed, then tried again.
"Ahoy and avast!"
The crew quieted and stared up at him.
"Well, thank you," said Randy. "I ain't meant to culturally appropriate your way of life or nothing by that." "I don't know what you're talking about,"
said one of the burliest-looking half-elves Randy had seen in this world.
"Yeah, Randy," said Denise. "What the fuck are you on about now?" "I just needed your attention is all."
Denise grinned.
"Are you gonna dance for us?"
The rest of the crew laughed. Some of them looked hopeful. Randy shook his head.
"No, it ain't nothing like that. I have a few announcements to make." "Don't nobody want to hear whose nuts you been sucking on," said Denise.
She took a swig from a bottle the men were passing around.
"That ain't the nature of what I mean to announce. Also, you shouldn't be drinking."
Before Denise could respond, Randy quickly moved to the announcements.
"First, our captain, Miss Catherine, has named me her new press secretary." "What's a press secretary?"
asked the burly half-elf. Randy remembered that the press probably wasn't a thing in this world. He wasn't sure, but the actual printing press probably hadn't even been invented here yet.
"That means I speak on her behalf." "Why?"
The half-elf nodded toward Catherine.
"She's right there. She's, shy."
It was as good an answer as any. Well, that probably wasn't true at all. But he'd already said it. Moving along.
"Second, I think we can all agree that a show of gratitude to Captain Longfellow of the Maiden's Voyage is in order."
The response to that was mixed. On one hand, he'd given them back their limbs. But on the other hand, he and his crew had taken their limbs to begin with. But he got a few claps from those who were grateful to once again have two hands to clap with. Captain Longfellow, who was listening from his own ship's rear deck, bowed gracefully.
"It's with a heavy heart,"
Randy continued, realizing he might be laying it on a little thick,
"that I inform you that Nightwind and the Maiden's Voyage will shortly be parting ways."
He paused to allow his crew to express any emotions they might have, but no one seemed to care. That made sense enough, considering how the relationship between the two ships began.
"As soon as we transfer our basilisk from his ship to ours, Captain Longfellow shall continue south to Baran, and we on Nightwind shall set sail for the island of Nazir."
"Nazir?"
cried Atal.
"Basilisk?"
said a bronze-skinned human, stroking a forearm that was considerably cleaner than the rest of his body. No doubt one of the men who'd benefited from a regeneration potion.
"Is that what ate Captain Martinoli? Why would you have a basilisk aboard your ship?" "They're mad!"
shouted another sailor.
"I'll swim back to the shores of mist before I sail for Nazir," said another.
"What good is it to have two working hands if they're only going to be used for slave labor in the mithril mines?"
"Come on, guys," said Catherine. "You promised you'd sail with me to the next port."
Atal frowned at her.
"We had no idea you were insane when we made that agreement. What business have you in Nazir?"
"I have to steal the gem from the Ice Queen's staff to save..."
The end of her sentence was drowned out in laughter. Even Atal laughed, and he didn't seem the sort that was easily amused.
"You
A little girl, too shy to address the crew of her own ship, wished to steal from the Ice Queen.
She looked to Captain Longfellow. He wasn't laughing, but he shrugged, as if to say, "Don't say I didn't warn ye." Catherine turned back to her crew with a determined look on her face.
"I need that gem to save my brother."
"Then your brother is damned,"
said Atal.
"And you will be captured and imprisoned. The Ice Queen will drain your soul until it is all gone."
"So she's like a vampire?" asked Randy.
"Even worse. A vampire will take your life and turn you into one of its kind. But at least you will continue to know who you are. The Ice Queen is very much alive. She is patient and sinister. Her methods will slowly drive you mad until you forget your true selves and think of yourselves as only tools for her greater glorification."
"So she's more like a cult leader then?" asked Catherine.
Atal nodded.
"Some men escaped the island in the early years of her reign, before the ice spread too wide. They were picked up by passing ships and returned to families that barely recognized them. None were the same men as when they were captured. Many struggled with the desire to return and beg the Ice Queen to let them spend the rest of their lives in the mines."
Catherine looked pleadingly at Randy, her new press secretary. There wasn't much he could think of to persuade them. Tim wasn't their problem, but he'd give it his best shot. He turned to Atal.
"Did you ever meet any of these people?"
Atal shook his head.
"This was before my time. It is common knowledge among sailors."
"If there's one thing I know about cult leaders, they know how to spread the kinds of rumors that keep normal folks at bay while they gather the strength of their loyal followers. It's possible these people you heard about was completely made up, and it's also possible that they were her most loyal followers sent out to spread fear of the island."
Some of the sailors seemed to be considering the theories that Randy was pulling out of his ass.
"A third possibility," said Atal, "is that these stories are true, and I have no interest in finding out firsthand."
He turned to Catherine.
"Whatever ails your brother, you have my condolences, but he is not my concern."
As much as Randy hated to admit it, Atal was right. He stood close to Catherine and whispered,
"It ain't right to force these men to come with us if they don't want to go."
After a long moment of silence, she sighed, then addressed her crew.
"Won't any of you come with us?"
The sailors grumbled to themselves and looked down at the deck.
"Most of us have families as well," said the burly half-elf.
"You've got at least 5 yourself in various ports,"
said the man next to him. The rest of the crew laughed. The half-elf shrugged.
"Those are the ones I know of. The point is, we can't go throwing our lives away for your brother. We all have people who depend on us as well."
They'd made as good an effort as they could have hoped for, but Catherine hung her head in defeat. After taking a deep breath, she raised it again.
"I can't afford to waste any more time, and it doesn't look like I'll be able to find a crew who's willing to join me at any port. If Captain Longfellow will have you, those who wish to sail to Baran are free to board this ship."
She looked at Captain Longfellow, biting her lower lip, like she was hoping he'd refuse them. Captain Longfellow nodded.
"Sorry, Captain. It be not my place to condemn these men to join ye on this fool's errand."
The crew formed a line on either side of the rear deck, giving Basil plenty of room in the middle. 2 by 2, they climbed from Nightwind to the Maiden's Voyage.
"And where the fuck do you think you're going?"
Catherine's tone was as sharp as any of the crewmen's scimitars. Randy followed her gaze and spotted Denise in one of the lines. Denise tried to pretend she didn't realize she was the one being addressed, but everyone was staring at her now.
"What? I don't give no more of a shit about your brother than any of the rest of these people."
That was probably the wrong thing to say, especially considering...
"That was obvious when you tried to rape him," said Catherine.
The sailors all exchanged awkward looks, like they didn't want to suddenly be privy to whatever messed up drama Catherine, her brother, and this dwarf woman had going on.
"Jesus Christ, woman," said Denise. "How many times are you going to play the 'you tried to rape my brother' card? The rest of these folks done tried to kill you. I don't see you giving them no shit about owing you nothing for it."
"And where were you when all that was going on?" said Catherine. "Hiding in your cabin, forcing some poor giant man to rape you?"
The murmurs grew louder.
"Did I hear that right? I don't understand. What does that even mean?"
Hagarf dropped to his knees on the rear deck of the Maiden's Voyage and started sobbing.
It's true. It's all true. It was horrible. She wouldn't let me stop, even when she was vomiting.
Randy could tell by the looks on their faces that, in all the time they'd spent at sea and in less than reputable port towns, this was the most twisted and depraved sexual encounter many of these men had ever borne witness to. He imagined it was difficult to tell such tales as to make a pirate uncomfortable, but Denise had an effect on people.
To be fair, said Randy, trying to mitigate some of the repulsion, she was vomiting on account of she's pregnant with scorpion folk.
As soon as he said it aloud, he realized it might have the opposite effect of what he'd been going for.
God damn it, Randy,
said Denise as the men closest to her inched toward Basil.
Don't nobody want to put their dick where it might get pinched by a fucking scorpion monster baby. I'm sorry. I was only trying to help is all.
Ye good folk seem to have many an unresolved issue between ye, said Captain Longfellow. Mayhap it be for the best that ye continue on your journey together.
To the captain's credit, that was as polite a way to say, I don't want that freak aboard my ship, as Randy could imagine.
Aw, oh, shit!
Denise glared at Randy as he stepped out of the line. Nightwind's crewmen began changing ships more quickly and efficiently. When the last of them climbed aboard the Maiden's Voyage and they began untying the ropes holding the two ships together, a thought suddenly occurred to Randy.
Wait!
He cried. Captain Longfellow let out an impatient sigh.
What be the problem now?
Don't none of us know nothing about sailing. Could one of you maybe give us a quick rundown on how all this stuff works before you go?
Chapter 42. Cooper had already done as thorough a search for Nabi as could be done, but he kept searching anyway. Anything to keep his eyes and attention away from Julian's fucked-up bird pulling out the satyr's eyeballs. He felt bad for the poor goaty bastard, but starving Ravenous wasn't going to bring him back.
What kind of goblins were those?
Said Chaz.
Aren't goblins supposed to be dagger fodder for level one parties? They came in like a goddamn Navy SEAL team.
Even Chaz's whining was preferable to Ravenous's slurping, so Cooper went to the bother of talking to him.
There's no rule that says goblins can't level up.
Do you think they're working for the Dark Lord?
Cooper shrugged.
They're probably just working for themselves.
No way. Nobody wanders around with net shooters and explosive powder bags unless they have a very specific reason for doing so. They were hunting pixies to take in alive.
Chaz scratched the back of his neck.
But for what purpose?
Maybe they wanted someone to jerk them off,
Cooper proposed. Chaz glared at him.
I didn't ask for that. She just reached down in there and went for it.
Giving Chaz shit about getting a hand job from a pixie should have been more fun, but Cooper just wasn't feeling it. He plucked a goblin arrow out of a nearby tree and considered how he might go about rescuing Nabi.
Those sons of bitches,
said Chaz. Now that Ravenous had moved on to the old man, Chaz was rooting around in the satyr's belongings. He shook his head at Cooper.
Those scavenging assholes took Zanzifrol's pipes.
That seemed a little judgmental on his part.
Don't you know that because you were looking to do exactly the same thing?
That's different,
said Chaz.
I'm a bard. My powers come from music. For any of them, it's just a toy or souvenir. I don't know what class they are, but they certainly didn't look like bards to me.
The way they snuck up on us like that, I'd guess rogues. But damn if they weren't effective. I've always viewed rogues as slightly less useless than bards and monks.
Chaz tossed the satyr's bag away and stood up.
So,
he said in a tone suggesting that he was going to follow it with something delicate.
I guess we're going to head back to the Horsehead now?
Fuck no,
said Cooper.
I've got to get Nabi back.
Come on, man. We're in the middle of a haunted forest. I've had most of my strength drained out of me by fucking ghosts. We're not at full hit points. There's an elite team of goblin assassins out here. All of our allies are either dead or captured, and we don't have any fucking weapons.
Here's a weapon for you,
said Cooper. He turned his ass toward Chaz and farted. Chaz nodded.
That's fucking wonderful. I feel so much better about following your lead now.
If Crybaby Bitch was a character class, you'd be a god by now.
I'm tired of being in constant danger. I want to sit down and relax without worrying about getting shot or having my soul drained. I want a cold beer and a warm meal. Do you realize the only time I've eaten in the past 24 hours is when Ravenous threw up in my mouth?
What the fuck, dude? Are you exclusively attracted to creatures with wings?
What?
Said Chaz.
How do you make something erotic out of what I just said?
Cooper raised his hands defensively.
Hey, man, I was just trying not to judge.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. Do you have any idea how to go about getting your stupid axe back beyond just walking up to the goblins who tried to murder us and getting shot properly dead before you can ask them to please give it back?
You're giving these guys too much credit,
said Cooper.
Yeah, they're kind of badass when they've got time to plan and prepare and take their enemies by surprise in a coordinated effort. But get one alone and unprepared, and he'll most likely be just as shitty as you.
Chaz sighed.
Thanks.
I figure we can grab one of them while he's out taking a shit.
A bonus thought occurred to Cooper.
Then we can also take his weapon.
Absolutely brilliant,
said Chaz. Cooper couldn't be sure, but he thought it sounded sarcastic.
And how do you propose we go about finding the goblins?
Cooper scanned the ground around him. There were leaves and dirt and roots and sticks, but he didn't see anything that looked like footprints.
Do you have any tracking skills or feats?
I don't think so. Is that something you have to declare that you're trying to do?
Fuck if I know, but I guess it's worth a shot.
Cooper stared at the ground more intensely.
Track!
Do you feel any trackier?
Asked Chaz. Cooper shook his head.
Maybe you should try it.
Chaz rolled his eyes and stared at the ground.
Track. Find footprints. I track thee. Look for signs of...
Jesus, dude. Knock it off. You sound like a fucking retard.
I was just doing what you told me to do.
And I'm borderline retarded, so shut the fuck up and check this out.
Cooper pointed to a thin rut in the dirt. Chaz squatted and peered at the ground where Cooper was pointing.
What am I supposed to be looking at?
Cooper got closer and pointed directly at the rut.
See this little groove in the dirt?
Yeah, so?
It's a bee.
Bullshit. That could be anything. Hell, it could have been from the sled for all we know.
I'm telling you it's...
Think about it,
said Chaz.
Who carries an axe with a blade dragging on the ground behind them?
Cooper grinned.
Nobody.
Chaz narrowed his eyes at Cooper.
I asked a question, the correct answer to which should prove your theory to be as stupid as it is. You answered the question correctly, and didn't you have a look of triumph on your face? Why do I feel like I'm missing something?
That's how I know it's Nabi. She gets inside the head of whoever's holding her. She can be very persuasive when she wants to be.
Chaz's face turned pale.
Shit, I think you might be right.
Seriously?
Those weren't words Cooper was used to hearing.
I was thinking about it earlier. These goblins seem like they're pretty good at what they do, but it was kind of sloppy to not confirm that we were dead. But if their leader picked up your axe, it could have told him something like, I don't know.
They're dead enough?
Suggested Cooper, remembering Nabi's voice in his head.
You got what you came for. There's no time to waste. Wow, this axe is heavy for a goblin rogue. You should probably drag it behind you.
Shit,
said Chaz.
Now we owe her.
The trail wasn't always easy to follow, and they moved slowly. In places where the ground was thick with dead leaves, finding the groove in the dirt was next to impossible. Each time Cooper picked the trail back up, it was less defined, and he was less certain that his whole axe-dragging theory wasn't completely horseshit. When they got to a deep bend in a wide creek, Cooper couldn't find anything he could even force himself to pretend was a trail on the other side.
We did our best,
Chaz finally said, sitting on a tree root with his bare feet in the cool running water.
I'm doing my best. You're sitting on your ass.
You might have been right about the axe thing. If those goblins are rogues, they probably take certain precautions against being followed. Following a stream for a while is a classic trail-killing strategy. If that's the way they travel, maybe Nabi couldn't persuade them out of it.
If that was true, picking up the trail was going to be really difficult. On dry ground, at least they had the guidance of a general direction to search in. The goblins could have gone either upstream or down, and for any distance, before coming out on the other side. Cooper had a brilliant idea.
Tell Ravenous to go look for him.
Chaz sighed.
Oh, I was wondering when you were going to suggest that.
Cooper could understand Chaz being a cowardly piece of shit, not volunteering that suggestion when it first occurred to him. It was the sigh that set him off. It wasn't bad enough that he was deliberately sabotaging Cooper's mission. He also had to rub Cooper's low intelligence in his face on top of it. Cooper stomped through the water toward Chaz.
Come here, motherfucker. I'll rub my ass in your face.
What? No!
Chaz scrambled to his feet, but he wouldn't be hard to catch with no shoes, barely any strength, and a naturally lower base movement speed.
You're going to look back fondly on the taste of bird puke when I'm done with you.
Stop!
Cried Chaz, his back up against a tree and his hands held up defensively.
I only meant that I'd considered that already, and it would only get Ravenous killed and alert the goblins to our presence.
Cooper stopped.
That sounds like bullshit, but I don't actually want your face in my ass, so I'm willing to listen.
Chaz sighed again, but this one was clearly a relief.
Whew. Think about it. There aren't any birds left in this forest. A big black raven flying around is going to look delicious and conspicuous, and I think we can both agree that those goblins are pretty good shots.
He had a point. Cooper grunted and scratched his balls.
The more I think about it, the more I agree with you.
Chaz continued.
I'd rather get killed properly with arrows than have the rest of my life drained out by those ghost things, which is exactly what would happen if we tried to leave this forest without you wielding that axe. The best thing we can do right now is...
Twang.
Son of a bitch!
Chaz suddenly had an arrow sticking out from his chest, up near the shoulder. He looked up.
It's an ambush! They're in the trees!
He jumped into the pool at the bend in the stream and submerged himself underwater. Cooper was so distracted by Chaz's peculiar and seemingly ineffective survival instincts that he was startled when a goblin shrieked from above, then fell out of a tree, landing right on top of Chaz, clouding the water red from the gaping hole in its chest. Chaz's scream that bubbled to the surface suggested that the goblin had landed specifically on his new arrow wound. A second goblin dangled right above Cooper's head, hanging onto Nabi's handle with both hands. Nabi's blade, dripping with blood, was hooked over the branch the dangling goblin had presumably just fallen off of. Nabi had to weigh at least a quarter of what the goblin did, which would make it difficult to wield effectively, especially when he was using both hands while up in a tree. Cooper grabbed the goblin tighter on the ankle and gave a good hard yank.
Ah!
Cried the goblin, but he held stubbornly onto Nabi's shaft.
Dude, you're not gonna win this.
Cooper pulled down hard on the goblin's leg again, but he wouldn't let go.
I'm really angry.
What the fuck is going on?
Chaz's voice barely registered as Cooper was overcome with his barbarian rage.
How did you woo?
The branch proved less determined than the goblin, cracking about a foot away from the trunk and knocking Chaz back into the water. Cooper grabbed Nabi by the shaft above the goblin's hands, then shouted as he pounded the goblin's head with his fist.
My axe! Let go! Fuck you!
The goblin let go of the axe about the same time Chaz reemerged from the water.
Cooper!
Cried Chaz.
Stop! We should take one alive!
A satisfying jet of bubbles flowed out of Cooper's ass as the rage within him calmed. A third goblin jumped down from a tree branch on the other side of the stream and ran away from them as fast as his legs would take him. He'll warn the others. Stop him! It was nice to have Nabi back, but not so much to have her barking orders at him when he was fatigued from coming out of his barbarian rage. As if placed there by the god of irony, two goblin bows, as well as an assortment of loose arrows, were floating in the water in front of Cooper and Chaz. They looked at each other, shrugged, and grabbed one of each. Two arrows in the back were enough to bring the fleeing goblin down.
We should use bows more often, said Chaz.
Cooper laid the goblin he'd beaten either to death or merely unconscious on the bank of the stream.
I don't know. Feels kind of lazy, like stabbing with a remote control.
I'm absolutely fine with that.
Chaz scooped together all the arrows floating on the surface of the pool and relieved the certainly dead goblin of his quiver as well as a small dagger.
Feel any better now that we're armed?
Asked Cooper, not minding if it sounded a bit like gloating. Chaz nodded.
A little.
He grimaced as he plucked the arrow out of his chest, then exhaled.
Whew, a little more now.
He examined the tip. It was coated with his blood, but he deemed it still usable and stuffed it into his quiver with the others. I've learned much from Grelnik.
Who the fuck is Grelnik?
Asked Cooper. Chaz shrugged.
I don't know anyone named Grel.
Dude, shut the fuck up. Can't you see I'm talking to someone?
Grelnik is the goblin who took me. He was the leader of the band who attacked you. The Dark Lord has promised them enchanted weapons in exchange for their protection while he gathers his power.
So he's like, what, working out?
The expression on Chaz's face asked what the fuck Cooper was talking about. He resides deep within Morning Glory Hole, collecting, Cooper snorted. Is something the matter?
Sorry, it's probably best that I share this information with Chaz.
Nabi agreed and transmitted her thoughts slowly enough for Cooper to relay them aloud.
He resides deep within Morning Glory Hole,
Chaz snorted.
Dude, grow the fuck up.
Cooper listened, then continued.
He's collecting part of the life force from every living thing that the Dark Ones drain.
Whoa,
said Chaz.
It's like a Ponzi scheme with souls.
The power is delivered back to the Dark Lord through the interconnected roots of the trees.
Cooper raised Nabi.
We've got to chop down the forest.
No. Cooper lowered Nabi.
My bad,
he said to Chaz.
Scratch that last part. I was getting ahead of her.
Chaz rolled his eyes.
So what are we supposed to do?
Cooper listened and relayed.
Due to their magical nature, pixies make good candidates for trapping inside magical weapons. Nabi's friends will suffer the same fate she has if we don't rescue them before the Dark Lord finishes gathering his power and awakens.
Chaz bit his lower lip.
I'm curious about one thing. What the hell happened here? Why were these three goblins hanging back? How did they know we were coming?
Because she told Grelnik we were following her.
Cooper thought about what he just said.
Wait, what?
I hoped it was true, but I couldn't be sure. I needed to exploit Grelnik's suspicions of Nezblatt anyway. He suspected Nezblatt of making advances on his mate. I fanned those flames a bit.
That's some cold shit, Nabi,
said Cooper.
I like the way you roll.
If the worst had happened and you had not returned to me, my only option would have been to continue sowing discord among the goblins and hoping they murdered each other.
What are you talking about?
Asked Chaz. Cooper relayed Nabi's scheming in his own words.
Oh,
said Chaz. He laughed weakly.
Well, I hope she doesn't pull the same move with us.
Nabi says not to worry. Grelnik has a weak mind.
Phew, what a relief.
Chaz didn't look relieved at all.
Perhaps we should get moving again. Get all that brute force and homicidal aggression nearer to the goblins.
What should we do with Grelnik?
Asked Cooper.
It sounds like Nabi pretty much grilled him for all the info he's good for. I say we just kill him.
If he's alive, you should bind him and take him with you. The Dark Lord has cast wards of protection on his goblin servants. The Dark Ones won't come within 30 feet of one while they live.
Sweet,
said Cooper. Chaz looked hopeful.
What is it?
The goblins all have words of protection or some shit. It keeps the Dark Ones away so long as they're alive. See if you can find a pulse on... God damn it, Ravenous!
Turning back to Grelnik, Cooper found Ravenous slurping back the optic nerve of his second eye.
No!
Cried Chaz. He dived at Grelnik and shooed Ravenous away. He felt frantically for a pulse, then tried a few chest compressions, but soon gave up. Grelnik was gone. He shouted incomprehensibly at Ravenous, like Charlie Brown's teacher. Ravenous squawked something back at him. Chaz sighed.
He said we should keep him better informed. At any rate, we should be sure to take one of those goblins alive so that we can get out of here after this is done.
Yes, keep as many goblins alive as you can. As much as I thirst for their blood, their wards of protection will be useful in flushing the Dark Ones out of hiding, where they can be more easily dispatched.
We'll do our best,
said Cooper. He turned to Chaz.
Try to keep them from killing the goblins if you can. Nabi wants to keep them.
That's kind of fucked up,
said Chaz.
But you know what? I'm beyond giving a shit at this point. Where's this glory hole place?
Cooper listened to Nabi's instructions, then relayed them to Chaz.
It's about half a day's walk from here. As she says, the goblins are heavily encumbered with equipment and prisoners, and they're paranoid about being followed, so they're taking a roundabout way of getting there. If we make a beeline for it, we might beat them there.
Awesome, said Chaz. And what then?
I don't know. Put our dicks in it or something?
Cooper paused for a moment to listen to Nabi.
Wait, no. Apparently we're not supposed to do that.
Oh, no,
said Chaz.
I can't believe the solution to our problem is something other than putting our dicks in it.
I didn't name the fucking place.
Cooper listened a bit more.
Nabi says we might be able to find a place to hide and ambush the goblins. Well, that will probably make more sense once we actually see what this place looks like.
Chapter 43. Julian hated waking up, not knowing where he was. He hated waking up in general, now that it wasn't natural for him to be asleep in the first place, and the fact that he was sleeping probably meant some bad shit had gone down. He was surrounded by complete darkness, and his memory was foggy. There was the Lamia, and a giant crocodile, and a quaint village full of dwarves. It was like some hazy, messed-up fairy tale. A surge of sudden hope ran through him, and he reached up for his ears. Shit. They were still freakishly long, he was still an elf, and the past few months of his life had not, in fact, been some booze-induced fever dream.
"Stacy?"
he whispered into the darkness. A reassuring snore came from nearby. That was her, all right. Best to let her rest. He remembered Orgel and Grella's hospitality and that bottle that Orgel had taken out of the hutch, but he only scarcely remembered drinking the stuff. That must have been what did him in. Stacy must have kept going, and then they carried him to the guest room, which must be down in the cellar. While he appreciated the hospitality, they might do well to invest in some mats or something for next time they have guests. This cold, rough, stone floor wasn't very comfortable at all. While he had the wee hours of the morning to himself, it was a good time to prepare his spells for the day. Julian needed to get back to the Horsehead Inn as quickly as possible in order to see if Ravenous had made it there, and he had no idea how far from Cardinia they were, so he filled all of his first-level slots with mount spells. Webb had served him well, and he didn't feel like thinking too hard about choosing anything else, so he filled his level 2 spell spots with that. He put the most thought into his 0-level spells, dividing his slots between Mage Hand, Detect Magic, and for his current circumstances, Light. When he came out of his trance, he heard heavy, fast-paced breathing. He was about to whisper to Stacy again, but she snored again, and it came from an entirely different direction than the strange breathing. Maybe he'd been wrong about what had happened last night after he passed out. He was suddenly a lot more curious as to where he currently was and who he was currently with. He felt around on the ground until he found a chipped piece of stone large enough to enchant. Before he could talk himself out of doing so, for there was no guarantee that seeing his surroundings would better his situation, he blurted out, "Light!" Vertical steel bars reflected the stone's light. Julian and Stacy were in a 5-foot by 10-foot cell. Stacy was on the other side of their cell, curled up asleep in the corner. In the cell across from theirs, a young, malnourished-looking dwarf girl was also asleep. In the aisle between the two rows of cells, a young dwarf boy, who Julian recognized as Orgel and Grella's son, Rorik, had his pants around his ankles and his dick in his hand, furiously jacking it off while staring at Stacy. It was a lot to take in all at once, especially when there was only a split second before everything went all to hell.
"Huh? Who?"
said Rorik, stepping back suddenly and tripping backwards over his pants. He landed hard on his back with his dick still in his hand. The dwarf girl opened her eyes, saw Rorik lying almost face to face with her on the other side of the bars, and screamed. Stacy yawned like a lion as she sat up.
"What's going on? Oh my God!"
Rorik removed his hand from his dick and frantically fiddled with a gold ring on his chubby dwarf finger until he finally slipped it off. When he slipped it back on again, he disappeared. Julian's heart skipped a beat. He patted his pocket, felt something small, hard, and round, and sighed with relief. But the thing in his pocket didn't seem to have a hole in it. In a panic, he reached in and pulled out a silver coin. It was the coin that Darton had thrown at him in the restaurant.
"Hey!"
said Julian, looking at the space where Rorik had been.
"That's my ring!"
He listened for sounds of Rorik getting up and fleeing the scene, but all he heard was more panting. Was he still trying to finish the job? Julian remembered being a teenager. He likely wouldn't ever have gotten himself into these sort of circumstances, but once in them, he'd probably have done the same thing. He pointed at the panting noise.
"Webb!"
The pinpoint accuracy hadn't really been necessary. Webb was a pretty wide-reaching spell.
"By the gods!" said the unnaturally skinny dwarf girl. "Please tell me that was a web spell."
Julian cringed at what she must have assumed the alternative to be.
"Don't worry, it was."
"Excuse me," said Stacy. "Can someone please tell me what's going on here?"
"Well, I don't know why we're locked in cells," said Julian. but our host's son, Rorik, stole my ring for his sneaking out of the house wanking sessions.
Stacy shook her head. That poor girl. Julian cleared his throat.
Well, actually, when I caught him, he was looking at you.
Please,
pleaded Rorik, still invisible and, judging by the rhythm of moving web,